Welcome to the Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm John Barber, and with me is Ryan Williams, and he finished first in our open contest. If you go over to the AdonisIndex.com blog, you'll see his pictures, and they looked amazing. And it, now, right off the bat, we were just talking. These picks look professionally done, but you just did these yourself, so that's pretty cool. Can you talk about that just for a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I live in Berlin, and I didn't really have any kind of opportunity to go get a professional shoot done. But I had seen some of the guys that, you know, like Jason Gottlieb had really cool, you know, professional photos, and I've seen some other ones, and we wanted to, my wife also does the Venus stuff. And, we, you know, wanted to make them look as good as we could. So we kind of, we put like the black backdrop that you see is actually like, it's like a trench coat and like a tuxedo coat and like a bunch of clothes that are just black, kind of pasted up on the wall. And then we borrowed a buddy's camera and like hung a lamp from the ceiling and the right angle and got, you know, a lamp on the sides for the backlighting. And we messed with it for quite a while.
I was going to say, how long did it take you to get the lighting just right? Because you hit the lighting really good here.
Yeah, it's a couple hours. I mean, we had sort of talked about it off and on for, I don't know, the last month of the contest. And I was pretty picky about it. And so once we got going, we actually had kind of a misfire where the morning that we were going to do the picks, I had done, you know, like a water deplete. I'd done a water load over the week and then done a deplete for, I guess I stopped drinking water about sort of 6 or 7 o'clock the night before. And then kind of early that morning, we have two kids and a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, and we were trying to do a big chunk of it before they woke up, which didn't really work out. But I was sort of like feeling crappy because I, you know, was on this water deplete, which is not something I'd done before, and we were trying to do the lighting. And so we kind of spent 2 hours just messing with lighting and just didn't like what we came up with. And then so we kind of gave up. And then I just had like a normal day where I kind of ate normally and everything. And then later that night, after they went to bed, we tried again, and that's when we got all the much better picks.
Oh, these look great.
Yeah, no, I was happy with how it turned out.
Yeah, I actually was surprised when you said you just did them yourselves because they look like they were done professionally. And that's kind of, for people listening, that's kind of, you can knock out a pretty good set of picks without, you don't need to hire a professional if you don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you know, really looking at them over and over and seeing exactly what the right angle is. And I imagine it's kind of a little bit different for each person, you know, your particular, you know, body and like how all the definition comes out just right. But no, it's definitely possible. I mean, it was just stuff we had, kind of lights that we had in our house already, and you know, trying to figure out how to the best we could do with what we had, and I think it turned out pretty good.
Yeah, it did for sure. All right, so well, we've all seen your pictures. What did you think of your pictures?
I thought they were pretty great. We took so many of them that by the end I was just a little sort of numb to the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely shocking to see the final product of, you know, I've been doing this now for 6 months or so. And, to get, I mean, this is definitely by far the best shape I've been in my whole life. And so it was pretty cool to see it right there, you know, in the pics, and it's, you know, to see different poses that show different parts of my muscles that I had never really seen, you know, like that before. You know, and then I had a sort of always thought of, you know, these kind of fitness model, you know, actors with who are really ripped in movies and stuff, and thought, wow, that must take some, you must have to do some insane stuff to get there, you know, but just kind of turned out that, you know, it's doable, which was, yeah, it's kind of shocking.
Totally. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, that's kind of, I mean, I don't know if you've listened to me say this before, but that's kind of what we're trying to do here, is show everybody that you're probably cover model. You're probably a few months away from cover model shape. You just didn't know it.
Yeah, completely. I mean, and we're sort of going out of order with all this, but, you know, I had spent years trying to get in good shape and kind of getting in sort of good shape off and on, but with like hours and hours and hours of working out, like 2 hours a day, like 6 days a week, tons of cardio, and, you know, eating 6-8 meals a day and all that stuff. And I get in kind of okay shape, but I could never do it for more than like a month. Mm-hmm. And this time, the big, like you said, you know, a couple of months you put in if you do it really well. You know, once I really started doing this, I think it was really only like 2 months, and I lost like, I don't know, 25 pounds or so. And that, then all of a sudden I like looked like I had always wanted to look. And I basically have been in that shape for the last 4 months or so, five months. And, you know, the contest, I got in a little better shape, but it's been really cool just to realize that I could really stay like this for forever if I, you know, if I just keep doing what I've
been. All right. Talk about that. How long have you been using our stuff?
I was getting ready for a show. I'm an opera singer, and I have to occasionally do these jobs where I have my shirt off, and that tends to be the motivator for when I get back into shape. Mm-hmm. I was doing one that I needed to be ready like around July 1st. But I'd done this so many times that I thought I can't just do another thing that's, I'm going to kill myself to get in good shape. And then, you know, 2 weeks after the show opens, I'm going to, you know, be 10 pounds heavier already. Mm-hmm. And so I was really searching out, trying to find something that fit, that was different. And I think the first thing I stumbled onto that led me to you guys was fitnessblackbook.com.
Oh, yeah, Rusty stuff.
Yeah. And I thought that was cool because it sort of thing is, you know, it was the first thing I'd come across. It was really like a aesthetics-based program that was mm-hmm. about, you know, looking a certain way. And then he started talking about Eat, Stop, Eat a lot, and which I had never heard of, and ended up buying that. And that was just like a light one off for me because I had really been a slave to the, you have to eat 6 times a day. You have to have a certain amount of protein. You have to, you know, or your muscles will fall off, or you'll, I don't know what, you'll like pass out on the floor after 4 hours.
Just the world will end. Basically.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But as soon as I read, I mean, just the day that I read it, and I realized, and, you know, Pilon's stuff is so straightforward, and here's all the evidence, and here's why I think this, and that in itself was refreshing, just to have somebody not be BSing me, because mm-hmm. I've read a lot of, you know, fitness industry material.
Yep.
I knew as soon as I had read it through that I could do that. That was totally a thing for me, because I'm a big all or nothing kind of person. I can really intensely focus on something when I need to, and then I'd rather not have to focus on it when I'm not focused on it. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as I started Eat, Stop, Eat, it was like, I mean, I was losing, you know, 2-3 pounds a week every week without much effort.
Match made in heaven.
Oh, totally. And so actually I started, once I got into Eat, Stop, Eat, I was looking for, I think I'd watched a couple of like YouTube videos with Brad and then listen to a couple of the, I think it was the, what was the original podcast that you and him did that was like the
Phi Life?
Yeah, Phi Life. And so I listened to all those, and then that led me to the Adonis podcast. And actually the podcast was the thing that really got me started with it. I think because, you know, I've been really wary of like starting a new program because I had a trainer in the past who I spent a lot of money with, and I got pretty good results, but it wasn't anything I could sort of take with me and keep doing. And I, you know, bought all kinds of different books and stuff. And so I was sort of not interested in buying another thing.
No, that makes sense. That makes total sense.
But after listening to a lot of I really listened to, you know, I don't know, however many podcasts there are, I listened to almost all of them in the first, you know, week or something, 2 weeks. I had a bunch of train rides that I was doing within a couple of weeks, and I listened to, you know, they were like 3 or 4 hours each, and so I'd listen to podcasts the whole time, and I just kept thinking, you know, these guys are not, they're not just trying to sell us crap. They, you know, you guys have a habit of kind of going through the process of how, your use of logic to come up with whatever, you know, your plan is, and so that really struck me, and then, you know, hearing the idea of this kind of one shape that could be the goal was a big deal to me because I had always felt like, you know, I needed to get bigger enough to be, I don't know how big I needed to be, but I needed to just be bigger. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, and there just was never any kind of end game And so then when I picked up the Adonis materials, and as soon as I did that, it was like, of course, having already been doing ESE, and I was kind of doing my own program in the gym, this was just great because it was like, it had a specific goal. I could work really hard with, you know, lifting, and I didn't need to do extra cardio, and I could just, it was like, it just focused my energies, so I could just, you know, do exactly what I needed to do to get the results I needed and nothing else, which is great for me because I'm really busy. I'm traveling all the time. You know, I have a wife and two kids, and I don't want to spend any extra time dealing with this part of my life.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's part of our whole point is not to make it unimportant, just to give it just the amount of time it needs and no more.
And I can definitely do, you know, I was doing, it's not like I was happy to do a certain amount of, put a certain amount of time into it. I mean, I started, the first thing I did was MBF, and, you know, it's a lot of time in the gym, you know, but compared to what I had been doing before, it wasn't that bad. And I, you know, I definitely can put in 90 minutes of intense focus, you know, 5 days a week, if I can just not worry about it the rest of the time.
yep.
Which is kind of how it worked. So
good. So, all right, well then let's get into the workouts. So Eat Stop Eat, was that all you did for diet? It was just Eat Stop Eat?
Yeah, I mean, then I ended up later picking up AGD, and I was kind of, I mean, I counted calories for a bit when I was really cutting hard, trying to get ready for that, the show, but not really too much. It was just only a couple of weeks, but I had kind of done calorie counting in the past, so I felt like I had a decent idea of how to count calories. I had always been eating too many calories, I think.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
I remember I read the book that probably made me, sort of shaped my training plan and diet plan for several years, was this, I think it was a men's health book called, like, Testosterone Advantage.
Oh, yeah, we've reviewed that.
And it was, I remember very, the one thing I think I took away from it, you know, it was like there was the percentages of macronutrients, blah, 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 but it was also like never eat less than 2,000 calories a day. And I somehow kind of got that stuck in my head.
Yeah.
Which, you know, being 6'1", I could kind of get away with, if I was right at 2,000 and I worked my ass off in the gym, then I could lose a little bit of weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it had sort of worked for me in the past, but then of course once I read ESE, that it totally changed my perspective, and so I counted calories and just to kind of retune myself. But for the most part, I didn't have to spend a lot of extra effort thinking about how many calories. I could sort of eyeball it, and I guess I was probably for the time I was counting, I was doing about 1,800 calories a day, and then like two fasts a week on top of that. Mm-hmm. And I lost weight really quickly. I went from, I think I was 205 or so, to down to, you know, 180 in a like 6 week period of time or something.
Wow. That's fast.
Yeah, it was really, it actually kind of coincided with the AT5, I guess it was the last one. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't really, I probably would have done the contest if I had, I bought the Donna stuff like the week after the contest started or something like that. But it sort of was the same time period as that, which actually is kind of interesting to follow the guys that were doing that, and, you know,
Guys call it doing a shadow contest. So
they go
along with everyone else, even though they're not in. Like some of the past open winners, like obviously can't compete again until the level two. So they were just sort of in the shadows doing it with them.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Sounds like you were doing the same thing. So, okay, so holy, that's a lot. That's a big change. So things are progressing along, and so you did MBF first. Did you get through that and move on to something else?
Yeah, I did. I actually ended up doing only 8 weeks of MBF because the gym I was in didn't have any kind of power rack or anything, and it only had one squat rack, and I didn't have a training partner, and so I was getting kind of, when we got to the higher reps, I was getting a little nervous about doing particularly like bench press and squats and deadlifts in that rep range. And so, and I had sort of considered early on maybe starting with 3.0 anyway, so I decided I would just go ahead and switch. And actually 3.0 was great because I for me personally, it worked better to have only 4 days a week on the schedule, and then I could add in, on the days I could go a fifth day, I could add in a booster or whatever. I really liked doing MBF. I felt I got really strong. I felt good about it. But I kind of like the flexibility of 3.0. So I've done that. I did MBF for, I guess, two and a half months. And then now I went right into 3.0. And now I'm just almost through with 3.0.
Right. What are you going to do next?
I'll do another set. I did the Rage the way it's set out in the way you guys recommend after the first two modules. So I'll do another set of Rage. And then I'm going to do ATS.
Good, good. I'll be interested to hear how that goes for you.
I'm excited for it.
Okay, so now is this different? MBF is similar to, I'm assuming it's similar to training you've done in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's been weird for me training in the past because I never really did a real program. It was always kind of thrown together. You know, like I said, I did that men's health book, but I only sort of did what it said. And I did a lot of, like, when I was kind of in high school and in college, I did a lot of kind of, you know, chest and bicep stuff. You know, the mirror muscles. And I went long periods without training at all. I actually got really overweight when I was about 21 or so. I got up to about 250.
That's big.
Yeah. And it wasn't even really trying to get big, you know, muscular big. I mostly was just, you know, just ate way too much. But so I've kind of gone up and down a lot over the course of my life. But training wise, the MBF was the thing that was different about MBF than what I'd done before was just the volume. It was a lot more volume than I was used to, but I mean, I was kind of game for that. I had heard you guys talk a lot about it on the podcast, and you had specifically talked about, you know, that there's a, what's the way you put it? The overtraining versus underconditioning, that made a lot of sense to me. And once I could sort of give up I had really thought I'd done kind of bodybuilding splits and, you know, always made sure I had a day off, at least one day off between, you know, days that I worked the same muscle group and stuff. And I think I just didn't really do as much volume as I could handle. I'd never really done that. So once I was doing MBF and I really did the 5 days, you know, on and then 2 days off, it was a ton of volume. In the first couple of weeks, I was like, you know, damn, this is killing me. But I found actually that once I sort of mentally got over the idea that, yeah, it's okay to train when you're sore, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you're overtraining, then it worked pretty well. I mean, and yeah, that was similar exercises to what I had done before. 3.0 was interesting because, you know, I hadn't done so much just kind of dumbbell stuff before, but I like it a lot. So, I mean, to me, it's cool to do. I like the idea that, you know, of switching it up pretty often. That's been different for me. I would go long stretches of doing the same thing over and over. And I think sort of without knowing it, I would do some kind of periodization because I'd just get bored. But I didn't really have a plan for that.
Yeah, I think left to your own devices, people will periodize to some degree because it's flat out of boredom. But unless so that helps a bit, but actually having some kind of idea of periodization.
When sometimes when I would get bored, I would just stop going to the gym for a while.
Or that too, yeah.
Instead of switching, which now is, I find that right about the time that I'm like, oh, I wish I was doing something else, is when the next kind of module comes along or whatever. So it works out a lot better.
Good. That makes me feel good. That means I must be doing at least something right.
Yeah, definitely.
But the volume on MBF is, after a few weeks, you get used to it, right? And it's
definitely.
And that's the thing. And then all of a sudden you're not training through soreness anymore. But I can see how the first couple of weeks people are like, I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah. Well, and it was funny actually then going to 3.0 feeling like, oh man, this is a breeze. This is, you know.
It's different. Easier.
I mean, it's different and it's, you know, it's still intense while I was doing it. But just the sort of overall amount of time in the gym was, you know, quite a bit less.
Yeah, it's different. It's almost as if after MBF 3.0, well, until you get to Rage, 3.0 is sort of just more time to recover. I don't know how to say it.
And
then ATS will change again, so it just keeps changing.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you've gone through the contest. What's it like post contest? You just cruising right now? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much cruising. I think because I wasn't like cutting really hard at the end of the contest because I was pretty close to where I wanted to be. I didn't have a huge kind of letdown afterwards. I didn't go crazy with food. I mean, I'm not quite where I was, but I'm pretty close. I took, because I was traveling, I took about 5 or 6 days off from training. But that's really all I did. And I, you know, I'm just keep going. I mean, I'm close to where I want to be. You know, I think I'm like 0.7 or something off from my actual golden shoulders. And so that's kind of my goal, sort of long-term goal, is to see if I can get there. But I'm happy with where I am right now. It's just kind of maintenance and making this a part of my life that I can, you know, sustain for, you know, forever, basically.
Right. And then, so for the contest, you didn't have a huge weighted change for the 12 weeks. You didn't need to, but that's because it's at the tail end of what was
exactly
quite a big change. So when did, so you actually started like 4 months before that?
Yeah, exactly. It was, so I started ESE, I think, like the very beginning of May. and then, you know, started Adonis stuff like, the end of May. And so I'd already lost a bit of weight when I started Adonis. And so then by like middle of July, I was pretty much weight wise, I was pretty much where I wanted to be. I could sort of see some abs and it was pretty close. And then I think I built at least a significant amount of muscle over the summer doing MBF. But in terms of just cutting down fat, since July, I've lost just a little bit, you know, at a time. And so probably I was like 182 on an average day in July. And now I'm like 177, 176 on an average day.
Right.
I was all the way down to like 171 for the contest, but that was mostly water.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's kind of how that goes. If you're going to mess with water, it shows up bigger on the scale than it really, than what's really going on.
Yeah.
And that's what happens at the end too. When you get that lean, the fat loss, it slows down. Like it's just the progress just is, especially in terms of like poundage, it's down to like fractions of a pound per week.
One thing that was kind of a little bit frustrating the last month was I could have just two or three bad days in a row and all of a sudden feel like I looked totally different. And it could come back really fast, but it was, you know, when you're like 5 or 10 pounds over your goal, a 2 pound difference isn't that big a deal. But when you're really right dialed into, you know, as lean as you're going to get, boy, a pound makes a big difference.
Oh, it washes you right out.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I had a few days where I was like, oh man, have I been that, you know, lax over the last week? And it really was just, you know, a couple of days worth of, you know, of eating a little more or whatever.
Yeah. And then that's at that point, it's all hydration and you can just look bloated because of whatever you just ate and it can wash you out or it can just distend your gut. Like if you're eating something that bloats up you from the inside out, it doesn't necessarily mean there's even any water subcutaneous as much as it is. You're kind of bloated for that, however long it takes for that to digest. So it's, like you said, people won't really notice it until they're that lean. And then all of a sudden everything you do is like, you change by the hour, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. Well, that was the interesting thing that you guys have talked about a lot for me, that I think I had a decent amount of muscle, you know, for what I considered a decent amount of muscle underneath my fat for a long time. But I never, until I really peeled it all away, I couldn't even see what I was working with. And I didn't know, you know, I had always sort of thought if I just kept lifting more and like got big enough muscles, the fat would not, you just wouldn't see it or it would burn away or something. I don't really know exactly what I thought, but,
you could big your way through the fat.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember specifically one summer I was like, I had the whole, I really believed the, you know, muscle burns like whatever, 50 times more calories than fat. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, if I just get big enough muscle-wise, then my metabolism will be so fast that I will burn all of this fat away. And that was when I was like probably 225 or something.
Right.
And I just, now looking back on that, it's just like, man, what a waste of time.
Yeah, a lot of people go through that, though. A lot of guys get trapped in that for not just a summer. They get trapped in that for like decades.
Yeah.
They go, and then I wonder, like, if you let most of your 20s and half of your 30s go by like that, that's all the best. That's a good chunk of the best years you'll ever look gone.
Yeah, totally.
Buried under all this fat. It's like, when are you going to get in shape? When you're 50? Like, what were you waiting for, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
But yeah, some guys get trapped in that, and there's just no way out. And then they think, like you said, and Mike Schaefer from the last contest, he said he thought he thought he could just muscle his way to fat loss.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I think that's the actual phrase he used.
It's such a weird. I mean, it's such a strange thing that I don't even. You know, I know it's partially just the way the industry works and the sort of messaging, but it's just now it's sort of seeing behind the curtain and seeing, you know, what kind of reality is. It's shocking to me that so many of us go through so much time thinking that we can eat more and somehow make that turn into fat loss.
Well, you know why? Because it's seductive and it's what you want. Are you kidding me? I would love to just who in the hell wants to diet?
Well,
Wouldn't it be way more fun to say, look, if you can get your bench press up to 350 pounds, you'll be ripped. I'll be like, damn right. I mean, I would want to do that anyways, right? And if you're telling me it's also going to make me lean, I'll just keep building. I'll, quote, keep building muscle. Why wouldn't I? But if someone's like, well, you know, you're going to have to cut your calories. It's going to be a struggle. Your workouts are actually going to become the same workouts, going to feel tougher. You might even be weaker in the gym. Oh, and all your circumferences are going to come down. Your arms might go from, you know, 17 inches to 16. But you'll look ripped and look bigger. Oh, and you're going to be way lighter. Like, who wants any of that, right?
Yeah, I guess
when the alternative is eat your way and train your way so big that you just burn all the fat off. Like, that's
– Yeah, but
that's,
to me also –
That sounds so much nicer.
Yeah, it's true. But I think also to me the idea of I did what you're supposed to do for big chunks of time, and I would sort of get in shape because because I did so much cardio. But it was so miserable to me to do – To stuff my face full of food I didn't want to eat, and at times I didn't want to eat it, and to go to the gym and not do things I wanted to do at the gym. Like, that's been a huge thing for me. You know, I travel a lot. I go to cool places, I always thought that the reason I couldn't get into shape is because I couldn't give up, like, food that I loved, I'd have to. Someday, if I really was committed to having the body I wanted, I would have to completely give up, you know, wine or chocolate or cheeseburgers or fries or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I travel all these places. Like, I'm in Berlin right now. There's amazing beer here. There's amazing, you know, pork stuff here. I'm going to Houston in January, and there's, like, great Mexican food there. You know, if I go to France, I'm going to eat, you know, baguettes or whatever. And it could never come to terms with the idea that I would have to, like, literally give up these huge categories of food, for a body. It was like not a good enough trade-off. I was like, screw it. I just can't do that. But the idea that, you know, with ESE and AGD, that actually is not the problem. Those foods really aren't the problem. It's just the amount you're eating of them or how often you're eating them. I tell you, that's been such a huge revelation for me. That's just taken this kind of, and it also took away the pressure of feeling like this was forever. You know, when I had dieted, quote unquote, before and been eating, you know, the food, been really like depriving myself of lots and lots of food categories, it felt like I can do this for the next 6 weeks. I know I can do that, but I don't know how I'm going to do that afterwards. Like, I don't know how, I don't know what happens after that. Because I can't. This is just miserable.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you can put up with the misery for the short term, but then you're left with, well, now what do I do? Just go back to being big?
Exactly. Yeah. And so now it's more of a, you know, like I've heard you say, micro diet. But you know, it's a. I need to. You know, yesterday I fasted, even though it's Christmas season, and you know, I just got back from a trip and whatever. But you know, I've just been eating a little more than I normally would, so I did a fast and it was fine, and like then it's over and then I could move on, and that doesn't really drive me crazy. You know, I can go on with my day. And I don't know, it just works out. That just, in my brain, it just functions so much better. And it's something that I feel like I can do for a really long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's part of the goal here, is to make this sustainable, not just a one-time deal. Because anybody can gut their way through a diet, no matter, like, grind it out, but like, where are you going to go with it afterwards? You can't grind it out for the next 30 years.
Exactly. Well, unless that's the I mean, I can understand if that's, if you literally are a fitness model or a bodybuilder and, like, that's your job, you know, maybe you can sort of have the life where you never sort of or almost never go out of that, you know, scope of you're allowed to eat broccoli and chicken breast or whatever. But if it's not your job, like, and you don't have to be in great shape, then I can see why people go years and years with, you know, wanting to get in better shape, but not knowing how to do it in a way that works for them, and then just never getting there.
Yeah, but I would also add to what you just said is that those fitness competitors don't maintain that shape for very long at all, because they do it in the way you used to do it.
Yeah.
They punish themselves to get there, and then they rebound. Like, I actually did a podcast with Eric Ledeen. I don't know if you listened to that one.
Yep.
And he said a lot of the girls he trains rebound huge. And they get to the point where the only way they can get in shape is with a contest. They actually can't. They have no clue how to maintain what they've done because they go so extreme. So it's just not the way it has to be.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that's, for me, it was totally exhausting. I imagine it's even more so for them when they're going so much farther with it.
Oh, yeah. Like, the shape you got in is more than I think anyone ever even needs to get to. Like, you're definitely could be on the cover of a magazine with this. But the competitors go even further.
Right.
They get even more ripped. They try to build even more muscle. I don't know why. It's the industry is, I don't know. I think it's in the Adonis manual, the concept of the model, the show model is never the model you buy.
Right.
Like the show, like when you see a car in the auto show, it's a concept car. It's like, it's got wings, but the one you actually buy doesn't.
Yeah.
Right? And then when you go to a fashion show, you see these ridiculous outfits on the girls that have like a boat on their head. It's like, well, that's not the model you actually buy.
Right.
And so like for fitness and bodybuilding competitors, they're not the model we're buying. Like
totally.
the one that we look at in Flex Magazine or the girls look at in Oxygen, it's like, okay, that's extreme. Let's do like, what's the model we're actually going to buy? And that's more like the look you ended up with is like, this is real. This is real. This isn't what, you know, and you even said like, this is a little bit extreme. Like you've come back from this a bit, which is normal. But they come way back from the pictures that from their shows.
Well, I think that's the super cool thing about the idea of the golden ratio to begin with is because it gives you a, you know, everybody, pretty much anybody that gets to that number, you know, the way you guys have it laid out, is going to look like they want to look. And it doesn't, you know, it kind of gives you an end goal. And I think, you know, especially when you look, I just read this article the other day about H&M is, you know, using digital bodies for their models and their print ads. So it's like they paste a person's face onto this body that they've actually digitally created.
Oh, it doesn't exist. It's not even anyone's
body. It's not even a real person. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't even really have a problem with, other than we all just should know that, like, you know.
Yeah, just disclose that.
And you look at the people that are on, you know, the cover of the fitness magazines, and I've heard you guys say this a bunch of times, but, you know, that's not a realistic goal for your everyday. And the proof is when you look at guys that are winning, you know, who have placed and won the transformation and open contest with you guys, that everybody looks different. Like, nope, it's not an exact look. You know, everybody looks good for them, but that's, you know, even with this particular ratio, like people vary a lot. But when you look at, you know, the person that gets to be on the cover of those magazines, they have to be so specifically, you know,
shaped.
Yeah. That it almost becomes unreal.
Mm-hmm. Well, it totally does. I mean, our ratios are, first of all, they're averages that most guys will fit into. You're already getting to the taller end of the spectrum where it may not necessarily add up. And guys that are any taller than you, like 6'3 and up, I'm sure our ratios break down at least to some degree.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I've actually have a good buddy who's also a singer who's in pretty good shape, and he's like 6'4" or 5". And he looks good. I mean, he's in good shape, but he needs like you know, I don't know, 3 or 4 more inches on his shoulders to get to his golden shoulders. And that's, you know, to him sounds, you know, impossible, but.
Well, it may be doable. It just depends. Like if our numbers skew for people tall and short.
Yeah.
Like it does. It's more the calculation than the way it all works out. Plus every time we get a new round of data, it just kind of adds to that.
Yeah.
It frays a bit at the ends. Right. So the taller you get, it's in most cases, the taller guys are a bit kind of leaner and the number might come down a bit under, and then the shorter guys, it may not work out that quite the same way. It's the middle guys, the guys like my height and Pilon and somewhere right around 5'8" to 6-foot-ish where it seems to be most closely approximates the ideal. Plus it also assumes maximum muscle mass.
Right.
Totally. Like when we did those numbers and like when I'm at my number, and in my pictures, that's like, to me, that's about as much muscle as I could fit.
Right.
And I've been spending the better part of 20 years trying to get as big as possible.
Right.
So if other people are taller or shorter and they're not quite as big as, you know, our numbers say, and they're wondering why, it's like, well, by the way, have you been training for mass for 20 years?
Totally.
Like, I'm talking as much muscle as you can carry is kind of what our numbers approximate
to. And to me, too, it's like the idea of having that as a goal is more useful than necessarily saying that it doesn't mean that everybody has to fit that exactly, but that's just that's the direction that we're going. And that, you know, it's sort of like when you start cutting calories, you know, you use some kind of calorie calculator to give you a starting point that doesn't necessarily mean you exactly fit that. You might be under or over. But, you know, I think sort of it seems like the same with the ratio. Like, everybody's perfect look might not be right on the button of that ratio, but that's the direction that you go. That's sort of your...
It's the approximation. It's the road you're traveling down, and then you stop. Where you stop on the road sort of is your choice. And it fits with your lifestyle and how you end up looking. You may find that an inch above or an inch below just fits on your body better, and maybe the... Either the further cut or the bigger build to readjust to the number right on the button just doesn't work for you.
Yeah.
And that's
in my particular case, I think it probably is just about exactly right. So it'll be interesting to see if I make it to the, you know, all the way there, what it'll be like. But it seems like most guys that at least on, you know, on the forums or who have been in the contest or whatever, who are, you know, close to that number, that they all look really good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and we're splitting hairs at this point.
Yeah, totally.
It's not like people 1 inch one way or the other should just go hide under a rock. I mean, everyone looks awesome. It's just now we're just, you know, this. Now we're down to like who would win in a head-to-head winner versus winner contest is kind of what we're arguing over now.
Yeah.
Sort of. That's kind of when we get right down to it. But yeah, the metric is, and you also have to understand, I don't know if you heard us say this, the idea of your 2D and 3D shape and then your thickness versus your width. For your width,
right.
Some people, their circumferences don't really tell the story of how thick they are versus how wide they are.
Right.
And it was interesting. Me, Brad, and Brian Chung, one of the guys who's routinely on the podcast, we have huge calipers, tree calipers down in our gym.
And
we did our.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah, and so we did our, and they're designed for measuring the thickness of the trunk of a tree. So you literally, these huge calipers just fit around the tree.
Yeah.
Well, we just put them around ourselves and anyone we're measuring, and even at similar ratios, like circumferences, of shoulders and waists, we all have different thicknesses and widths.
Yeah.
So like on a front view, Brian's shoulders might actually be a bit wider than mine. But on the side view, like front to back, like chest front to like the back, I'm thicker than he is. So it's like, you know, from the side view, I'm thicker, but from the front view, his aesthetic is slightly a little bit wider. And then, you know, what can you do about that? That's just how you're built. And that's why we all end up looking our own way. And then that's dependent on which muscles are bigger, like how much, what's contributing to that. That measurement, is it your chest, your shoulders, your back, your traps,
totally.
Your rhomboid, like everything is developed to the degree it's developed to, plus everything hangs on a slightly, and then you end up with your own look at that thing. So like 100 guys are going to, at the exact ratio, are going to have 100 different looks.
Yeah, totally. Well, and I find that with me, even that I'm, you know, I think my shoulder number is actually sort of higher than I expect it to be because my shoulders are really wide set, even though I don't have, I was thinking my chest is sort of slightly underdeveloped compared to the rest of me, but that because it's kind of wide, it's not out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you're talking width. You probably have more width than thickness.
That's yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's not bad because it's still the illusion's still there. The
right.
Ratios.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why everyone has their look. Everyone just has their look. If anything, that tells you what to work on to round your look out. Like yeah. I have to be careful not to overdo the like for me, I always focus on shoulders, like building them out wider because that's where I'm I guess weakest, so
yeah,
to speak.
That's where your frame doesn't go out as
no, but my frame goes front back. Like I can just keep getting thicker front to back. It seems like my my thickness isn't where I'm weakest. It's my width.
Yeah.
Whereas for you, you already have that good width. You want to work on thickness, like
right.
things that build your chest out and build the middle of your back out.
Yeah.
And that's just you know once you get lean enough, you notice it.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I guess we're getting on to the end here. What is your take-home message, like, for guy, like advice for guys, like use the community, don't use the community, enter the contest. What would you say to guys who are trying to?
But definitely.
Someone looks at your picture and like, I want that. Like, what do you say?
I would say a couple of things. One, definitely use the community. Those guys are awesome, and they'll be honest, and they won't be jerks. They were really useful for me. The contest was definitely fun. I think it depends probably on your particular personality, whether that's a good push for you or whether it's, you know, overwhelming. And I think some people maybe take it as I'm just going to work hard for these, you know, couple of months and they don't think about how it works for their whole life. I mean, to me, the biggest thing is you have to figure out for you what's sustainable. And that's not going to be exactly the same as the next guy over. You know, for me, it's really intense bursts of energy and focus, but in short periods of time. So I try to work as hard as I can when I'm at the gym. And if I'm fasting, I'm not, you know, eating at all. And the rest of the time, you know, I just put a minimal amount of thought into it, which is it's really almost none. 'Cause I can handle that. I know I can do that over time. And also about, you know, if you have little slip ups here and there, as long as you keep making forward progress, you'll get there. There's no penalty for having a day of mistakes or a couple of days of mistakes. When you put a couple of weeks together, then it starts to make you feel like you're not making progress anymore. And that can be a problem. But I think, looking for what you can sustain. That's really the, cause if you look, it should be a long-term thing. You know, you need to find what works for you, you know, for a long period of time, not just to, like you said, to grind it out for a few months. So, and that has been the huge difference with using this program versus other ones I've had in the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's great. Well, I think that's, unless you have anything else, I think that's a good place to leave it off.
No, I think that's good. It's been fun.
All right.
Thanks.
All right, so for Ryan Williams, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. Mm-hmm.